Welcome to Drabblecast Backstory, Episode 1, The Pied Piper of Hamelin. Backstory is a podcast in the Drabblecast extended family that brings you the strange stories behind strange stories. Be it fiction, urban legend, or old wives' tales, songs, political or historical narratives, I'm going to be diving into the weird, creepy, and disturbing memes behind the scenes in this bonus podcast on a semi-reoccurring basis. Not too reoccurring, but semi. Definitely semi. And I'm your host, Norm Sherman. I love story forensics, a thing I just made up that I love. Narrative archaeology, if you will. And why wouldn't you? Because everything starts somewhere, even and especially ideas, before going on a journey to become whatever it will become. And the journey that stories go on before landing in our lives, their backstories, if you will, often tell a tale just as interesting. This week we're looking at the beloved children's nursery rhyme, moral story about honoring your agreements, timeless cautionary tale about flautists in general, The Pied Piper of Hamelin by Robert Browning. Why? Because it's possibly the single largest case of real-life actual mass child abduction on historical record. That's right, it really actually happened. But what really actually happened? You probably have a version of the story in your mind. The general lore, a weird dude with a flute hypnotically leading a bunch of kids under a hill out of spite in order to teach a whole town a valuable lesson about not fucking over your pest control provider. But where's the line between fact and fable on this one? Because I don't know about you, but I've got questions. But first, before we explore the story behind everyone's personal favorite child abduction yarn, come with me now to the tiny town of Hamelin, and the story that took place there according to Robert Browning. We bring you The Pied Piper of Hamelin by Robert Browning. Come with me now right this way. Right down here, that's right. Oh, watch your head. Try not to slip. Those are onyx stairs. Yes, right down there. Follow the candles. We're good.
Hamelin Towns in Brunswick by famous Hanover City. The River Weser, deep and wide, washes its wall on the southern side. A pleasanter spot you never spied. But when begins my ditty, almost 500 years ago? To see the townsfolk suffer so from vermin was a pity. Rats. They fought the dogs and killed the cats, and bit the babies in the cradles, and ate the cheeses out of the vats, and licked the soup from the cook's own ladles, split open the kegs of salted sprats, made nests inside men's Sunday hats, and even spoiled the women's chats by drowning their speaking with shrieking and squeaking in 50 different sharps and flats. At last the people in a body to the town hall came flocking. "'Tis clear!" cried they. "'Our mayor's a noddy, and as for our corporation, shocking. To think we buy gowns lined with ermine for dolts that can't or won't determine what's best to rid us of our vermin. You hope, because you're old and obese, to find in the furry civic robe ease? Rouse up, sirs, give your brains a racking to find the remedy we're lacking, or sure as fate, we'll send you packing. At this, the mayor and corporation quaked with a mighty consternation. An hour they sat in council. At length the mayor broke silence. "For a guilder I'd my ermine gown sell. I wish I were a mile hence. It's easy to bid one rack one's brain. I'm sure my poor head aches again. I've scratched it so, and all in vain. Oh, for a trap, a trap, a trap." Just as he said this, what should hap at the chamber door but a gentle tap? "Bless us," cried the mayor, "what's that?" With the corporation as he sat, looking little though wondrous fat, nor brighter was his eye, nor moister than a too long opened oyster, save when at noon his paunch grew mutinous for a plate of turtle green and glutinous. "Only a scraping of shoes on the mat? Anything like the sound of a rat makes my heart go pitter-pat. Come in, the mayor cried, looking bigger. And in did come the strangest figure. His queer long coat from heel to head was half of yellow and half of red, and he himself was tall and thin, with sharp blue eyes, each like a pin. And light loose hair, yet swarthy skin, no tuft on cheek nor beard on chin, but lips where smiles went out and in. There was no guessing his kith and kin. And nobody could enough admire the tall man and his quaint attire. Quoth one, "It's as if my great-grandsire, starting up at the trump of doom's tone, had walked this way from his painted tombstone." He advanced to the council table, and,
"Please, your honours,"
said he,
"I'm able, by means of a secret charm, to draw all creatures living beneath the sun, that creep or swim or fly or run after me so as you never saw. And I chiefly use my charm on creatures that do people harm, the mole and toad and newt and viper, and people call me the Pied Piper."
And here they noticed round his neck a scarf of red and yellow stripe, to match with his coat of the selfsame check, and at the scarf's end hung a pipe. And his fingers, they noticed, were ever straying, as if impatient to be playing upon this pipe as low it dangled, over his vesture so old-fangled.
"Yet,"
said he,
"poor piper as I am, in Tartary I freed the cham. Last June, from a huge swarm of gnats, I eased in Asia the Nizam of a monstrous brood of vampire bats. And as for what your brain bewilders, if I can rid your town of rats, will you give me 1,000 guilders?
50,000! Was the exclamation of the astonished mayor and corporation. Into the street the piper stepped, smiling first a little smile, as if he knew what magic slept in his quiet pipe the while. Then, like a musical adept, to blow the pipe his lips he wrinkled, and green and blue his sharp eyes twinkled, like a candle flame where salt is sprinkled. And ere 3 shrill notes the pipe uttered, you heard as if an army muttered. And the muttering grew to a grumbling, and the grumbling grew to a mighty rumbling, and out of the houses the rats came tumbling. Great rats, small rats, lean rats, brawny rats, brown rats, black rats, grey rats, tawny rats, grave old plodders, gay young friskers, fathers, mothers, uncles, cousins, cocking tails and pricking whiskers, families by tens and dozens. Brothers, sisters, husbands, wives followed the piper for their lives. From street to street he piped advancing, and step for step they followed dancing, until they came to the river Weser, wherein all plunged and perished, save one who, stout as Julius Caesar, swam across and lived to carry, as the manuscript he cherished, to Ratland home his commentary, which was: "At the first shrill notes of the pipe, I heard a sound as of scraping tripe, and putting apples wondrous ripe into a cider press's gripe, and a moving away of pickle tub boards, and a leaving a jar of conserve cupboards, and a drawing the corks of train oil flasks, and a breaking the hoops of butter casks. And it seemed as if a voice, sweeter far than by harp or by psaltery is breathed, called out, 'O rats, rejoice! The world is grown to one vast dry psaltery. So munch on, crunch on, take your nunch on, breakfast, supper, dinner, luncheon, and just as a bulky sugar puncheon, already staved like a great sun shone, glorious scarce an inch before me, just as methought it said, "Come bore me," I found the Weser rolling o'er me." You should have heard the Hamelin people ringing the bells till they rocked the steeple. "Go," cried the mayor, "and get long poles. Poke out the nests and block up the holes. Consult with carpenters and builders, and leave in our town not even a trace of the rats." When suddenly up the face of the piper perked in the marketplace with a,
"First, if you please, my 1,000 guilders.
1,000 guilders? The mayor looked blue. So did the corporation too, for council dinners made rare havoc with claret Moselle van der Graaf hock. And half the money would replenish their cellar's biggest butt with Rhenish. To pay this sum to a wandering fellow with a gypsy coat of red and yellow. "Beside," quoth the mayor with a knowing wink, "our business was done at the river's brink. We saw with our eyes the vermin sink, and what's dead can't come to life, I think. So, friend, we're not the folks to shrink from the duty of giving you something for drink, and a matter of money to put in your poke. But as for the guilders, what we spoke, of them, as you very well know, was in joke. Besides, our losses have made us thrifty. 1,000 guilders? Come, take 50. The piper's face fell and he cried,
"Yea, no trifling, I can't wait. Beside, I've promised a visit by dinner time, Baghdad, and accept the prime of the head cook's pottage and all he's rich in, for having left in the caliph's kitchen of a nest of scorpions no survivor. With him I proved no bargain driver. With you, don't think I'll bait a stiver, and folks who put me in a passion may find me pipe to another fashion."
Ho! Cried the mayor. "Do you think I brook being worse treated than a cook? Insulted by a lazy ribald with idle pipe and vesture piebald? You threaten us, fellow. Do your worst. Blow your pipe there till you burst." Once more he stepped into the street, and to his lips again laid his long pipe of smooth straight cane. And ere he blew 3 notes, such sweet, soft notes as yet musician's cunning never gave the enraptured air, there was a rustling that seemed like a bustling of merry crowds jostling at pitching and hustling. Small feet were pattering, wooden shoes clattering, little hands clapping and little tongues chattering, and like fowls in a farmyard when barley is scattering, out came the children running. All the little boys and girls with rosy cheeks and flaxen curls and sparkling eyes and teeth like pearls, tripping and skipping, ran merrily after the wonderful music with shouting and laughter. The mayor was dumb and the council stood as if they were changed into blocks of wood, unable to move or step or cry to the children merrily skipping by, and could only follow with the eye that joyous crowd at the piper's back. But how the mayor was on the rack, and the wretched council's bosoms beat, as the piper turned from the high street to where the Weser rolled its waters, right in the way of their sons and daughters. However, he turned from south to west, and to Koppelberg Hill his steps addressed, and after him the children pressed. Great was the joy in every breast. "He never can cross that mighty top. He's forced to let the piping drop, and we shall see our children stop." When lo, as they reached the mountain side, a wondrous portal opened wide, as if a cavern was suddenly hollowed, and the piper advanced, and the children followed. And when all were in to the very last, the door in the mountain side shut fast. Did I say all? No. One was lame, and could not dance the whole of the way. In after years, if you would blame his sadness, he was used to say, "It's dull in our town since my playmates left. I can't forget that I'm bereft of all the pleasant sights they see, which the piper also promised me. For he led us, he said, to a joyous land, joining the town and just at hand, where waters gushed and fruit trees grew, and flowers put forth a fairer hue, and everything was strange and new. The sparrows were brighter than peacocks here, and their dogs outran our fallow deer, and honeybees had lost their stings, and horses were born with eagles' wings. and just as I became assured my lame foot would be speedily cured, the music stopped, and I stood still, and found myself outside the hill, left alone against my will, to now go limping as before, and never hear of that country more.
Alas, alas for Hamelin! There came into many a burgher's pate a text which says that heaven's gate opens to the rich at as easy rate as the needle's eye takes a camel in. The mayor sent east, west, north, and south to offer the piper by word of mouth whatever it was men's lot to find him, silver and gold to his heart's content, if he'd only return the way he went and bring the children behind him. But when they saw 'twas a lost endeavour, and piper and dancers were gone forever, they made a decree that lawyers never should think their records dated duly, if after the day of the month and year these words did not as well appear. And so long after what happened here on the 22nd of July, 1376, and the better in memory to fix the place of the children's last retreat, they called it the Pied Piper's Street, where anyone playing on pipe or tabor was sure for the future to lose his labor, nor suffered they hostelry or tavern to shock with mirth a street so solemn. But opposite the place of the cavern they wrote the story on a column, and on the great church window painted the same to make the world acquainted how their children were stolen away, and there it stands to this very day. And I must not omit to say that in Transylvania there's a tribe of alien people who ascribe to the outlandish ways and dress on which their neighbours lay such stress, to their fathers and mothers having risen out of some subterranean prison, into which they were trepanned long time ago in a mighty band, out of Hamelin town in Brunswick land. But how or why, they don't understand.
Ooh, but how or why, they don't understand. Special thanks to Rob Gall there for that awesome reading. I love that a single rat and a single kid survived to tell a tale to their own respective communities. See, that's how we know. As any armchair child abduction enthusiast or visitor to the actual town of Hamelin, Germany will tell you, in the center of town, in the Church of Hamelin, there once was a stained glass window, now destroyed, but there's a reproduction of it there now, and pictures abound online, that describes an event which actually occurred in the 14th century. It's super creepy. You should Google it. Stained glass window, Church of Hamelin, Piper, something like that. The image is of a radiantly clothed man, surrounded by numerous supplicated children, all dressed in white. And I know what you're thinking. Maybe these were young bakers. Maybe this was a mentorship program. Maybe these kids were off to bake and getting a pep talk from some sort of eccentric but well-meaning big brother baker type. Maybe this was helping keep these kids off the street. Nah, don't kid yourself. Churches don't make fancy windows for baby bakers. This window was and is considered by most locals and historians to have been created in memory of some sort of tragic historical event that occurred and affected all the town's citizens. What a bummer of an image to have hanging above you in the window as you walk into church, huh?
Good morning, welcome. Good to see you. Someone took your kids, all of our kids. Welcome, good to see you.
Really gets you in the mood to sing some medieval plain chant.
I wish some guy with a flute hadn't taken Timmy forever. Maybe a while, but not.
To further corroborate the story's origin point, Hamelin town records actually start with the date of this mysterious event. They start there. This was such a big deal that it became their point of reference going forward, with the records beginning in 1384, with the ominous words, "It has been 100 years since our children left." Talk about a good story opener. But also talk about a cliffhanger, because then there's just about nothing in terms of specifics for another 100 years. To be fair, a lot happened in that hundo anno, but we'll get to that.
The earliest surviving account of the Piper event in Hamelin after that point comes from a text called the Lundberg Manuscript, written by a monk named Heinrich of Hereford. This was written circa 1440, and you can still find it inscribed in a house in Hamelin today, known as Rattenfängerhaus, which translates to Awesome German Metal Band, but also Rat Catcher's House. Here's what's inscribed. In the year 1284, on the day of Saints John and Paul on 26th June, 130 children born in Hamelin were led away by a piper clothed in many colors to Calvary near the Koppen and lost. So, a little more intel. Our innocent Deutschkinder didn't just leave, they were lost, but still not particularly forthcoming with the specifics. 130 kids were just led out of town and lost? Whoopsie-daisies! Led where? By whom specifically? And perhaps the most puzzling and unsettling question of all, the question I never hear anyone ask or wonder aloud for some reason, that's always baffled me, what in God's name did he do with them? Really, though, someone tell me what you do with 130 German kids once you got them in your mountain. Run a subterranean summer camp? Summer's no time to be all cooped up in a mountain. Who could possibly want 130 kids for literally anything? In your face when you're trying to practice flute, crying because they're scared of bats, asking to go to the bathroom, touching your mountain walls with their grubby little schnitzel fingers. Surely this was more than the piper ever meant to bite off. 130 actual kids. Why do it to yourself, man? I mean, why do it to the kids? Sure, it's obvious, but I mean, why? What was going through that poor bastard's head? It's sad and tragic and regrettable, and it was those things in equal measure for everyone involved. It's just a lot of kids, is all I'm saying. It's a lot. Fairy tales and oral tradition in general are often ways that totally messed up things throughout history get passed down throughout the years, especially when you don't have newspapers and your neighbors can't read because it's the Middle Ages. As these stories evolve, some truths may remain, some half-truths may gradually become whole truths, and it's up to us weird podcasting dudes to sort it all out. So let's go over three main points here that might shed a little light on what happened. Theories backed by history and historians. Right after a word from our sponsors.
Have mouse problem? No problem. Now is the time on Sprockets when we kill. Call Tate Hammer Pest Control, where we take care of your rat and mausen conflickety split. And at no extra cost of child. Guaranteed. That's right. Little human ones stay. Little furry ones go. Taint Haber Pest Control, where we say Auf Wiedersehen, children, as we leave town. That is, because they are still with you, silly. Call 1-800-299-8454. That's 1-800-NO-CHILD. Don't throw the baby out with the rat slaughter.
All right, number one, let's talk rats. They fought the dogs, they killed the cats, the gosh darn piper took our brats. So, from the limited pieces of factual backstory evidence we have, the stained glass window and the first entry into Hamelin Town record, we've got nobody talking about rats. The window claims it had been 100 years since our children left. The Lundberg manuscript only adds in the piper, but makes no mention of rodents as an issue. So where'd the idea of these rats enter the story? It might be tempting to say, hey, Middle Ages, rat problems, Norm, duh. Black Plague and such, and you're not wrong. The Black Plague happened in 1340. The stained glass window was created the same century, near the same time. Rats were a big problem. Rat catcher was a big profession back then. But the town record beginning in 1384 stated that it had been 100 years since our children left. 1284, placing the incident about a half century before shit got real in Europe. And far less so in Germany, by the way. Now, that's not to say rats weren't an issue for the citizens of Hamelin. Certainly they were for many towns. But were they really more of an issue and more of a pesky nuisance than, you know, just 130 kids? I don't know. I just think it's important to ask these questions. It introduces motive. The issue of rats, though, even though I think we can safely say not the bubonically infused kind because of the 60-year difference in timeline, is still important, because while not in the original few short scrawlings we have about the event, they do tend to be basically in every version of the narrative after the fact. And just because things weren't written down doesn't mean people don't, you know, talk. So when do we see rats added to the narrative? Mid-16th century, a good 100 years or so after the Lundberg manuscript, 200 years after the stained glass window, in something called the Zimmer Chronicle.
This is in 1560 by Count Froben Christoph von Zimmer of Swabia, which is going to be my new Tinder profile name after this. This expands the story for the first time with the inclusion of rats. Since I am again returning to matters concerning rats, I cannot neglect to mention a miracle of God, which in identical form was reported many years ago in the town of Hamelin, concerning the banishment of rats. A story which, because of its unusual nature, is definitely worth remembering. And there also to conclude that the Almighty created some odd creatures without instilling in them human reason. Several hundred years ago, the inhabitants of the town of Hamelin in Westphalia were plagued with such a large quantity of rats that it became unbearable. It so happened that a foreigner, an unknown or traveler, much as the traveling students of long ago, came into town. Hearing the troubles and complaints of burghers, he proposed whether they would consider a reward for him if he were to remove the rats from the town. They were overjoyed with such news, and for his offer they promised to pay him a sum of several hundred guilders. With that, he went through the town with a little pipe, which he placed to his mouth and commenced to play. Immediately, all the rats in the town came running out of the houses in an unbelievable number. They began to follow his feet as he walked out of town. He banished them to the nearest mountain, and no more rats were seen. This accomplished, he demanded his promised reward. But they had hidden it away, confessing that although they'd been in agreement with the sum, that since the matter had caused him no difficulty, but rather he dispensed with his task so easily, not by hard work, but by an unusual art, therefore they felt that he should not ask for so much, but lower his sights and take less. The stranger, however, insisted on keeping the original agreement, and he persisted in seeking the sum promised him, and if they didn't give it to him, they would rue it. The townspeople, however, stayed with the opinion that this was far too much money, and they no longer wished to give it to him. When he realized that he was not going to receive anything, the stranger began to walk through the streets with his pipe as before. There, the majority of the children in the town under the age congregated, and they followed at his feet and out of the town to the nearest mountain. The mountain miraculously opened up, and the stranger and the children went inside. Immediately afterwards, it closed up again, and neither stranger nor children were ever seen again. Now there was great wailing throughout the town, and the people could do nothing but commit themselves to God and admit their guilt. The town reported this wondrous story in all its correspondence as an eternal reminder, and added the right number on the date according to the birth of Christ. On the end, however, they added to the departure of the children in such and such a year. I love how Lovecrafty the Christian God gets here, swallowing people up into hungry hills. Hey, find something that works. So, an example of God's holy vengeance via miracle told by Count Froben Christoph von Zimmer of Scabia in his periodical about the nature of animals such as rats might not sound like reliable support for rat motive theory in the Pied Piper tale, but it does give us a pretty good idea of how backstory gets developed. Reminds me of an article I read not long ago on Annelids in Crypto Journal Weekly. Since I am again returning to matters of invertebrates, I cannot neglect to mention a certain miracle of Mongolia, which in identical form was reported many years ago in the town of Xinchui, concerning the swallowing of several frolicking village children in their entirety by a 10-meter-long annelid that breathes fire from one end and shoots lightning from the other. A story because of its unusual nature that's definitely worth remembering, and used therefore to conclude that the Almighty certainly created some odd creatures indeed to keep errant village children from indulging in distant desert wickedness. And see, that's how we know. Here's something that may have you considering things a little differently than what Count Froben could offer with rats and miracles. And here we begin to bleed into the second part of this. Sometimes kids just vanish by the hundreds. Concurrent with our stained glass window and our first Hamelin Town Record reference, we have what historians now consider an agricultural recession of the 12 and 1300s mounting, which was later followed by the full gambit of medieval disasters, climatic, pestilent, wars of the 14th century and beyond,
Famine caused by excessively bad weather was a big deal for our Hamelin citizens, wiping out wheat, barley, oat, rye, bringing some pretty hardcore suffering. Our big theory here is that the townspeople of Hamelin, and particularly the children, were possibly stricken by a horrible epidemic of the 13th century, typhus, maybe an earlier strain of the Black Death, and let's just include outright starvation in there as an option too. Historians suggest that if a widespread epidemic or death event did occur, the townspeople would have buried their children in a large common grave, which of course we as sleuths already in this depraved but gripping historic tale would have already recognized as being represented as the mountain that swallowed them up, right? You with me? And get this, medieval depictions of death are frequently presented as a skeleton, wearing a colorful pied attire, a jester who always laughs last. Jesus, humans really do have an innate fear of clowns, don't we? Saving that one for another episode. The Pied Piper in this scenario thus becomes the Lord of Rats, known at the time as the Great Death, or simply the Pestilence, and would indeed be the one responsible for taking the lives of the 130 kids in Hamelin with his seductive tones.
Beep, beep, Richie!
No, thank you. Was the Pied Piper simply created as a symbolic figure to help the townspeople of Hamelin make sense of what would have been an unspeakable but perfectly explainable natural tragedy? Pied Piper could have been a coping mechanism, and the fact that things are vague in our original stained glass window and manuscript was because things were vague to them. Why is this happening? Rats everywhere, invisible death, why does everything have to be awful? Was it because we didn't pay the rat catcher? Was it because we made fun of flautists? I don't know, but I gotta go to the bathroom. What's going on? It's dark in here. I'm scared of bats. Oh my god, who's in charge? Did anybody think this through? How did any of this happen? 'Cause we're the kids in the cave. Humanity. Huh? That's what I was trying. I couldn't quite. So I'm just explaining it. Sometimes it just happens. Sometimes kids just vanish by the hundreds. And now we get to the third point, and things really start getting dark. The non-mountain fates. You'd think they get better from there. They don't. But first, a quick word from our sponsors. Tired of being out of the loop?
Heck yeah, where am I?
Girl, looks like someone needs to read the papers.
Tell me about it. What's paper?
Why, there's only one paper for you, sweet cheeks, and that's the Count Froben Christoph von Zimmer Escabia's Zimmer Chronicle.
That sounds like words.
Indeed it does. Find out all about the latest whatchamahalfsies and this and that's regarding rodents and the essence of free will, the nature of God and man, as well as all your local news about massive deadly worms and magical soothsayers.
Massive deadly worms, you say?
And the nature of God and man.
And how?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Count Froben Christoph von Zimmer of Scabia's Zimmer Chronicle. Subscribe today.
Welcome back. We're about to examine the third likely scenario that played out and led to those 130 kids vanishing off the face of the earth. And let's start with that very last phrase there, vanishing off the face of the earth. If the children of Hamelin had died of disease, rat-enabled or otherwise, or generally starved to death, and thus been led away, carried away, and in the end buried in the coppin-domed hills lining the city of Hamelin, we would find remains, naturally, and we haven't. I mean, they haven't. People looking around for little kid bones. I mean, I don't do that kind of stuff. I've got a podcast to run. And phooey, right? Because I don't know about you, but I was feeling pretty damn good about that last theory. But unfortunately, we're not seeing the dead bodies of children that we need. Theory 3 we can divide into two different outcomes. One states that the children struck out on an ill-fated children's crusade, as the young people around Europe were sometimes known to do during the Crusades. The other, they were sold into slavery by their parents or the government to roving Germanic tribes or Transylvanian gypsies. Let's start with the first one, that these children struck out on their own. First off, children does not necessarily mean particularly young kids. These were townspeople, possibly young and unmarried, sure, maybe in their teens for all we know, and we don't know. The story of the Pied Piper might actually refer to a mass immigration event known as the Children's Crusade that actually did occur in 1212. And this thing gets to be a real shit show, folks, so buckle in. The Children's Crusade was one of the many popular supposed sub-crusades by European Christians to regain the Holy Land from the Muslims. And I know what you're saying, Norm, 1212 is like 60 to 70 years before the Hamelin kids done got themselves abducted.
I know, friend, I know. I'm not saying this is how it went down. What I'm saying is, on the one end of the historical record, you have a bubonic plague explanation about 60 years too late, and on the other end, you have this one, kids fighting for Yesu about 60 years too early. I'm not here to give you answers. I'm here to give you backstory. The Children's Crusaders left areas of North France and Germany, and the traditional narratives, as I said, are likely conflated from both factual and mythical events, but all include their supposed start with the mythical visions of either a French boy or a German boy, Stephen or Nicholas, with the intention of peacefully converting Muslims in the Holy Land to Christianity. Also, bands of children marching to Italy, and children inevitably being sold into horrific lives of slavery and unthinkable suffering as a result. Many children were tricked by merchants, sailing over to what they thought were the Holy Lands or the Grand Calling, but in reality were ultimately straight-up slave markets, waiting with open arms outstretched. These kids, ranging in ages, were often led away by some kind of town recruiter, who was usually musically inclined with a particular affinity for woodwind instruments. I'm just playing. Not about the recruiter part. That's real. Ah, you guys aren't going to trust me anymore. Anyways, alternatively, the Pied Piper could have been a slave trader with a military whistle around his neck to get attention, because sadly the practice of buying and selling children wasn't at all unusual at the time, and it would have been a way to, you know, get the town rid of some poor people, some illegitimate orphan children leeching from the system, although I somehow doubt that narrative would have prompted measures remembered in stained glass. I think it's likely that pieces of all three of these theories are true. I think rats were probably an issue to some degree, and a perfect red herring. And I think the Piper was real and equally not real as the perfect scapegoat. And I think that some villagers made some tough choices that day, and that they never wanted to speak of it again. Yet they couldn't die unremembered. Today, the town of Hamelin, which is now home to a population of around 56,000, maintains information about the legend of the Pied Piper on its website, and during the summer months, actors perform interpretations of the story in the town square. The road along which the children supposedly passed on their way out of the East Gate, never to be seen again, is called the Bungela Sinistrasse, or Street Without Drums, and it's against the law to ever play music or dance on the street to this very day. What do you think happened to the lost Hamelin 130? I'd love to hear your thoughts. If you're a member of the Drabblecast Discord server, and as a supporter of the Drabblecast, you could be if you aren't and want to be. Message me on Patreon or something and let me know if that's the case and you just don't know how to do it. Anyways, there's a backstory thread there now, unlocked for you at this tier, and I want to hear your thoughts about theories and ideas. What would you do to entertain 130 kids if you had to live with them under the Earth's mantle? And hey, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, for supporting the Drabblecast, for supporting me. This is not like one of those toxic Piper town people relationships where I feel taken advantage of, and even if I did, I would never take your children from you. Unless we had some sort of agreement, and if that was the case, then I would certainly expect you to honor whatever amount of guilders we had shook upon, because parenting looks really tough. Also, on the Backstory Discord thread there, I'd love to hear suggestions and ideas from you on future Backstory episode topics. I'm all ears. Ears, water, a small subsection of gnarled ganglia, and a tuft where some withered organs for sexual reproduction used to be. Thank you for supporting the Drabblecast, folks. Can't wait to bring you more of these. Special thanks to voice actors Mike Boris and Abby Stillwell, who just had zero idea what the context was for these lines, just dutifully knew not to even ask at this point. And thank you to Boy Meets Robot for our awesome theme music. I'm off to Siam. I hear they have a vampire bat problem, and I don't want to get too excited, but maybe it's like a huge problem. Until next time, this is Uncle Norm reminding you, churches don't make fancy windows for baby bakers. Now let's not get ahead of ourselves.
And how?
Now let's not get...